The opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Fun, the 4US Network.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Nontario. Today's episode is being recorded currently during the U.S. presidential election, and it's something we don't quite know really what's going to happen. We're in the day after the election, and it's a busy one, and as nothing's been called yet, and so if you're listening to this much after, it's been long decided, and you guys know what's happening. We don't, so it's an interesting time. However, today's topics are going to be quite different from U.S. politics. It's still going with an Ontario theme. We're going to talk about Saskatchewan and Quebec today. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Aaron Seal.
Bonjour tout le monde. Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be here, as always.
And Aaron, you know, when we were deciding what to talk about, I think one of the topics that... you know, I've always wanted to talk to you more about, because obviously you live currently in Montreal, is Quebec, because I don't think much of Western Canada understands Quebec.
And the disconnect there goes on a couple of fronts. It starts with language. Obviously, Quebec takes pride in French heritage and in French language. But it goes beyond the superficial fact that the words are different and that the phrasings are different, because language for Quebecers is a core part of culture. And culture for Quebecers is identity defining. The concept of the Quebec nation within a united Canada, as we phrase it in the last decade, is fundamental, and Quebecers believe that there, and Quebecers know that there are core distinctions in the way of life that exists in Quebec compared to the rest of Canada. So, in order to understand Quebec on a meaningful level, whether politically or socially, you have to start by at least appreciating the language and understanding what it reflects, because the traditions, the institutions of Quebec culture have evolved from Quebec history, going back to the days of New France and the tensions that existed during the colonial eras and in the early days of Canada, and is reflected in the way the National Assembly is set up, the differences in the legal system. So you can't look at Quebec from a perspective of Ontario or BC or anywhere else in English Canada and expect politics or society to work the same. Quebec culture is different. Quebec culture embraces its difference, starting with language and history and the way people treat each other and approach public discourse. So it's important to appreciate those differences if you're going to understand Quebec politics.
And, you know, for myself as a newcomer here, when you think about Canada outside of Canada, unless you're in a largely francophone community, you don't always tend to think about Quebec. You think about Canada as just being another North American country, and it's most likely all English and mostly leaning towards British ancestry. But a lot of people that end up coming over here, they see this culture that's Quebec, and you know, Quebec still also attracts a lot of immigrants that don't speak the language either. And it's an interesting dynamic, I think, with the French language as it stands right now, because I think if you were to ask most Canadians across the country what language they speak and function in, or the world around them functions in, you're going to hear a lot about English. Not so much so perhaps back east, obviously outside of Quebec. I'm thinking New Brunswick, perhaps?
Well, the minority French language communities elsewhere in Canada, absolutely. You've got Francophones in New Brunswick, in Ontario, in Manitoba, and those communities are distinct on their own. A Franco-Ontarian will not have the same values or way of life as somebody north of Quebec City, for example. But this dynamic in Quebec particularly has been changing over our generation's lifetime, between you and me, Hafiz, over the past decades. I am what's referred to in Quebec as a child of Bill 101. So my father is an immigrant, immigrated to Montreal in 1975 from India. As a result of the René Lévesque government, which took power, the Parti Québécois government in 1976, which was sovereigntist, which is an extreme version of Quebec nationalism, one of the things that they did in the law referred to in Quebec as Bill 101 was requiring children of immigrants to be educated in French as the mother tongue language of instruction. There are some small loopholes here and there, but predominantly ever since the late 70s and early 80s, if you're the child of an immigrant in Quebec, you are educated in French and you are required by law to learn French. Now, what that has done is created a generation of then young adults and now adults who otherwise might not have integrated culturally into the Quebec nation that have done so. And for a lot of us, myself included, now take great pride in the fact that we are part of the Quebec, where we consider ourselves part of the Quebec nation. We are part of the Quebec nation. And on parle français, we speak French. Many of us are bilingual, trilingual. The word for it that I know is polyglot. Hafiz, I don't know if that's a word that we say in English, but in French it's polyglot, which is embracing the fact that you speak multiple languages, and it allows you a perspective on intersectional culture that I consider extremely rich and extremely valuable to offer perspective on life and on society. So that's the way Quebec society is moving. If we were talking about the foundations of the sovereignty movement as it existed in the middle of the 20th century, it was what's referred to in Quebec culture as pure laine, which translates literally to pure white wool. So if you look at the history of Quebec culture during that era, going back even to the Maurice Duplessis days of the 1950s, Quebec French culture was predominantly white, dominated by religious institutions as it was in the 40s and 50s, and very inward looking. Following changes in government in the 60s and 70s, this is what's referred to in Quebec as the Quiet Revolution, La Révolution Tranquille, Quebecers largely disassociated themselves with the Catholic Church and changed their way of life to be more secular, but also more embracing of the importance, the distinct importance of the Quebec nation within North America. And over time, this hardened in the 70s as the sovereigntist movement ramped up. We, of course, know the two referendums. All of this has come together to evolve Quebec society. And in my mind, one of the pivotal moments in the decade of the mid-2000s, when the Harper government took power, passing a motion in the Federal House of Commons recognizing Quebec as a distinct society within a united Canada. Those words, distinct society and within a united Canada, are extremely powerful because Quebecers, especially in my generation, as our generation sort of takes over as we move forward, sees Quebec nationalism and Quebec culture differently than the previous generations. The sovereigntist sentiment, we saw this in the 2018 election, which elected the François Legault government provincially, in which the Parti Québécois had for them a disastrous showing, reduced down to 10 seats, even tying them with Quebec Solidaire, which had previously been a fringe left-wing party. The Parti Québécois, which had a number of premiers over the course of several decades, is now a rump in the legislature and reflects the changing nature of Quebec nationalism. For several decades, it was focused primarily on pursuing the goal of independence. That has waned in recent years, but there is still a fervent pride in the distinctiveness of Quebec culture, and it is rooted in these distinctions, which, as I say, are evolving over time.
It's interesting how you're talking about this adopting of French culture and the language, because language and culture are very closely tied together sociologically. Language is a way of learning culture, and it's a way of getting adopted into a culture very often. As someone that's lived around the world, I've noticed this with people that, were learning Arabic around me, or even people that moved here and learned English as opposed to having spoken a different language or not having spoken English at all. Now, English and English cultures aren't really always ones to focus on multicultural aspects. Up until late, it's always been a language and a culture of dominance of, well, why speak any other language? It's interesting in BC, today, getting your child into a French immersion school is highly sought after, especially where I grew up in North Vancouver. And actually all throughout the Lower Mainland, I'd say the French immersion schools and those programs for French immersion are highly sought after, which is really interesting to me, mainly because we're the farthest away you can get from Quebec. There isn't any heritage of French identity in British Columbia. It's literally in the name, British Columbia. But I wanted to go back to something you were saying about young immigrants that come over here, and that learned, and that their kids who like yourself, who learned French as their main primary language and getting adopted into that culture. Because we're in a state right now where there's a new generation of immigrants coming into Quebec. Is there the same transmission of that culture? Maybe not so much to the parents, but to the children.
Well, the immigration issue in Quebec plays differently and should be looked at from a different perspective than the way it plays in English Canada. What I'm about to say is based on personal experience, but I think it's representative. The way I've experienced multiculturalism in Ontario has been very sort of arm's length. So there's a desire not to offend, to maintain respect, to not challenge, but to sort of live in peace, but at a distance. Whereas my impression in Quebec and my lived experience has been there's more integration, more welcomeness to form mutual communities, but where there's moments of tension is in questions like religious symbols and religious face coverings, because the secular nature of Quebec leads to a mindset where community acceptance and integration requires mutual humility in the sense of willingness to integrate cultures and to respect questions of tension and difference. So when French Canadians or even Frenchmen and French women in France object to religious symbols, they're not doing it out of offense or out of a desire to exclude or out of a desire to be judgmental. They're doing it, in my impression, to create common bonds and to create norms that foster inclusiveness. And for in some perspectives in English Canada, my impression is that's difficult to understand, because the idea of judging somebody's cultural norms in English Canada is not something that's as socially acceptable. The spirit, as I've lived it, of questions of religious symbols in Quebec is designed to foster inclusion on mutually accepted grounds. That's not the way questions of cultural acceptance are approached in English Canada.
In terms of cultural acceptance and how it's, you know, comes across in English Canada, we've obviously gone through a huge change because it wasn't always like this. And to some elements, it still isn't. It is still okay to question sort of one's cultural affinity and affiliation to Canada. I mean, as an immigrant, I've seen that in this country as well. I find in Quebec, now the only place I've ever been to is Hull in Quebec, which is right on the border of Ottawa. So, but there was, it's still, as the moment you cross that little bit of over the water there, there's an immense cultural change. Almost for me, that cultural change was highlighted mainly in the fact that I was 18 and I found this wonderful thing called the sac in Quebec.
Yes, and alcohol laws in Quebec are more lax. You've got the drinking age is 1 year lower than Ontario in as age 18, and yes, the cultural spirit that you will experience in a border town like Gatineau. Frankly, well, part of it is the comparison with Ottawa, because Ottawa is a boring bureaucrat town. But if you go across the bridge to Hull, you will feel Quebec culture instantly. And the further you go in, if you drive north from Hull up into the Pontiac region, or if you start driving east to Montreal, you will feel that more pronounced the further into mainland Quebec you go.
Oh, yeah. And I think that really speaks to the distinctiveness. And I wonder is the kids that have come and immigrated today, do you think, just like yourself, they're going to adopt the French culture and Quebec culture the same way you have and see themselves as Quebecers? Or do you feel that they might see more of an affinity with their sort of fellow Gen Zs across Canada?
Well, this is the interesting thing about Bill 101, which, as I say, required French language education for immigrant children, also placed restrictions on use of English in marketing signage. These were intended in their original incarnations to advance the cause of Quebec sovereignty. What they have done in practice through generations like mine and will continue to do through subsequent generations is evolve Quebec culture into something that will be different from what it was in the mid-20th century. My friends from high school on social media who grew up as children of Bill 101 like I did, for the most part, overwhelmingly are incredibly proud to identify as Quebecers, but they do this, we do this for different reasons, sometimes slightly different, sometimes very different reason, as a Piolaine Quebecer might have done during the separatist eras of the 70s. The idea of, as I say, speaking multiple languages, connecting on cultural levels, these principles are different now than they were before, and they will continue to evolve. There are some Quebecers, the sort of more traditional Quebecers, who might object to this, and sometimes you hear this in some of the more rural northern regions of Quebec, but by and large, I feel this is incredibly healthy and is in no way a threat to the Quebec nation and the distinctiveness of Quebec. If anything, it reinforces this, because the principle in the abstract is that Francophone Quebec is almost an island within North America, almost a bit of an oasis if you consider yourself part of that culture. And it doesn't have to be the same thing over time. So I believe this is incredibly healthy, and it reflects a different cultural experience that you're going to find elsewhere in Canada, because let's be honest, Canada is not a monolithic entity. The Canada you will experience in Victoria will be different from the Canada you experience in Yellowknife, will be different from the Quebec, from the Canada you experience in Quebec City or Montreal. And this is part of the great, what makes our country great, is that you can move around and experience different ways of life. And as I say, I'm a living part of that, and my friends growing up in Quebec are too.
It's interesting you say that. I definitely noticed that, your take on what the Canadian experience is vastly different depending on what you experience in your day-to-day life. I'm continuously surrounded by green life and you know, the great outdoors. So I always imagine Canada as this beautiful wilderness, and that might be very different from someone that, you know, is in the middle of industrial Ontario. In terms of sort of Quebec culture and for Quebecers that leave Quebec, I have a friend that his name's Benoit, a very common name there, so it's not giving away the person at all. But Ben, he moved here from Quebec, and it took him a while to get his English on par, on level over here. And he still misses BC and would very much like to move here. But his girlfriend, whose ancestry traces back in Quebec, she doesn't really speak English at all. And so she's very limited. Now, do you think that's, how does that play out in terms of someone's opportunity in being a Canadian?
Yeah, so if you are a Francophone who moves to an English region, you will pretty consistently find that English Canadians are less forgiving of imperfections in English than the other way around. There's a tweet that I read the other day from a guy named Carl Bellanger, who's an NDP strategist on the federal level, who said that there's basically two languages on Parliament Hill. There's English and there's translated English. Which is not wrong, because in on Parliament Hill, if you are a Francophone, you're almost expected to tolerate the fact that Anglophones, when they try to speak French, are going to make mistakes, sometimes grave mistakes, in a way that would not be accepted the other way around. That is one of the disconnects between English Canadian culture and French Canadian culture that we're going to have to solve if we're going to have meaningful cultural reconciliation to maintain Canadian unity. There is a line that we often say in Quebec, which is two solitudes, which is that French Canadian culture and English Canadian culture is almost a bit of an uncomfortable marriage. So we have the country, we've built it, but there's still divides between the two. Those solitudes do exist, and it reflects in things like forgiveness for our language errors. So that disconnect does exist. Francophones, as you say, Hafiz, who move into English Canada have a tougher time than the other way around. And that is reflective of the reality that the integration between the two languages still isn't where it needs to be. And for our generation, Hafiz, I would say that has to be something we resolve in our lifetime. And it starts with cultural understanding. It starts with a willingness to mutually understand. In French, we say on se comprend, to really look at these at our norms of interaction, at the differences that exist on a micro level, and to be willing to understand each other so that we can find common ground.
I am very much in agreement with you. I, as you know, someone that's relatively newer to Canada than most people that sort of grew up here from the get-go, and as someone that's visited, as I said, Hull, I think that there's more to be done to sort of create this unifying Canadian experience. And you know, from what it comes across to me as is the Quebec experience is less of the cultural mosaic and more of a little bit more of a melting pot. And as an immigrant, a lot of what you hear today is, this individuality and then this multiculturalism and talking about the cultural mosaic as the ultimate ideal for Canadians. And for the most part, you know, we've been brought up to agree with that out here. However, as an immigrant, I sometimes like to throw back, and I appreciate my own culture, but I feel as though Canadians or newcomers here, and I look at a lot of those around me, they would like a little bit more cultural adoption inwards. And you don't get that so much in English Canada. You don't get this little bit of a pull in to join in on a culture. It's more of this like, okay, so yeah, that's your culture. Yeah, you know what? Here's a little bit of hockey. We can all like this together. And, you know, they'll try look at hockey through the lens of, you know, the a person of color and whatnot. But adopting that person of color into sort of the realm with their culture and whatnot is a relatively new experience in English Canada. But I find that immigrants like yourself that have that have come from immigrants like yourself, have had this really strong cultural experience of being pulled in Quebec. And do you think that could be replicated in any way across Canada? Is there some way that we could share more Quebec culture across Canada?
Well, I hope to see that happen in my lifetime. I'll go further than what you said, Hafiz. I know that in English Canada, the concept of the Canadian mosaic is glorified. I don't like mosaic as a frame for culture, and the way I've lived it, it just doesn't work for me. The idea of voiced respect for multiculturalism while communities are expected to maintain distance, the idea that you look at cultural ghettos, you look at questions of regional divide, like we're going to talk about Saskatchewan later. The cultural divide in Saskatchewan between mainstream, I'll say white English culture, and Indigenous communities and new immigrants is extremely stark in Saskatchewan. Questions of First Nations, systemic racism, questions of overt prejudice. These things, in my impression, are more stark in English Canada than I've experienced them, for example, in Montreal. So in my mind, the path to change away from, as you say, Hafiz, a mosaic model where we accept that we all live in the same country, but we all maintain our distance, versus shared common norms based on mutual understanding. It starts with individual will. And my impression is there's just a little bit less of that in English Canada than what I've experienced in Quebec.
And I would agree with you in that sentiment. There has been, but I find that will that lack of will mostly comes from sort of a progressive wing of Anglophone Canada, not so much the immigrant population itself. And I can speak for a vast number of immigrants and kids that come here that have always tried to pull into other cultures. Now, it does succeed a lot more today, but it definitely is difficult. You have this gap in school between yourself and sort of the local population that you know has called us home the whole their whole life. I found that when I was growing up, there definitely was for a lot of my Iranian friends a lot more of a silo. And it even got into a point where there's racial wars in our schools between different sides. And I feel that a lot of that came through this. Yeah, we're a cultural mosaic, but no one really talks about your piece. It's just over there and on the side. We're not gonna touch it. You just exist with us. But that bond that holds us together is just this loose cement. Whereas it feels truly, like when I saw everyone wearing a Team Canada jersey during the 2010 Olympics, I felt that was a unifying moment that pulled everyone inwards into a sort of a cohesive feeling. And that is something I feel that is cultural, but without, being anything like overtly excessively nationalistic towards any one particular side.
Yeah, and you got to trace out the history on this sort of thing, because you remember English Canada is a byproduct of colonialism as it existed over centuries. And the colonial mindset, if you take it to the extreme, is yes, I'm willing to interact with other cultures, but implicitly I believe, whether I voice it or not, that mine is better, which is a poisonous mindset, but which is a mindset that did dictate actions over the course of centuries. So, and you, if as it flows through generations, parents teach their values to their children. You might not explicitly voice prejudice, but implicit in your choices and your thinking might very well, and often is, in English Canada, for those who are descendants of colonialism, an assumption implicitly ingrained in the mind that there is a right answer on questions of culture, and it is the one that your forefathers taught you. As our generation becomes more multicultural, on an individual basis, the impetus in my mind is for individuals to embrace humility, to recognize that the cultural norms of yesteryear, whatever they were as they were handed down to you from your parents, may not all be correct. The way of life of the previous generation need not be the one that is preserved going forward. And there, if you get into some of the Western separatist movements, the Jay Hills of the world, they'll use messaging that explicitly says that they want to protect the way of life that they inherited for their forefathers. In my mind, that's disastrous, because that's communicating to me an embrace of prejudice. For me, our generation needs to move in the other direction to develop mutual understanding. And that's not going to happen if the mindsets of yesteryears are just accepted.
And I think you bring up a very good point in sort of it being on this new generation of Canadians, mainly sort of younger Canadians and, you know, people our age, because we've made several strides in sort of the concept of multiculturalism. But I think that as a country, we need a little bit more on identity to unite us all, especially now that we have so many different cultures participating in what is the sort of Canadian experience. And I look at sort of, you know, are the immigrants that are coming from areas that, you know, they don't speak any English or French right now, and what opportunities we could have of having them experience both. But I think this is a good point to segue, because we were talking about colonialism and its impact on sort of the Canadian experience, and Saskatchewan is actually a really good place to sort of bring all that to light, because Saskatchewan is a real big mix of cultures, and has been historically immigrant supported, but also has deep roots with First Nations culture.
Absolutely. First Nation culture is critical to understanding Saskatchewan politics. And the tensions are quite important in Saskatchewan. You look at, I'm reading here a report from 2016 on First Nations representation in government. At the time, 0 of 9 First Nations mayors, 1 of 19 councillors, 1 of 14 MPs, and 2 of 101 judges, First Nations representation, which is pathetic, frankly. And it's not clear to me that it's changing over time. And there's parts of Saskatchewan where there's very little desire to see that change. One of the big stories out of the Saskatchewan election this month, which basically returned the same government that they had before, almost literally, the seat count was 46 for the ruling right-wing Saskatchewan party before the writ, 48 afterwards. The NDP was exactly unchanged, 13 to 13. So the government was basically returned as it was. But the big story on the margins was the Buffalo Party, the separatist Buffalo Party, which got about 2.5% of the vote. If that movement rises, that may well be a defense of the status quo, a desire to see the values of the past retained despite desire from the mainstream, from the immigrants, to achieve meaningful change towards a greater good. That, I will argue, is a risk in Saskatchewan that has exposed itself as a result of this election. It'll be very interesting to see going forward whether you actually embrace meaningful integration or whether you just pay lip service. Because let's be honest, there's a lot of people who are willing to write Black Lives Matter on social media, but aren't willing to look within themselves and ask how they're contributing to the problem. So that question in my mind is going to be something to look at as Saskatchewan society and culture and politics moves forward over time.
Saskatchewan, in terms of how it connects with their First Nations community, is sort of a topic that's not fully always discussed, and it's sort of like one of those topics you don't really talk about, and if it's not talked about, it's almost better, because then you can pretend it's not there. And I its neighbor Manitoba also historically has a division between those two cultures. And it's very interesting because as a British Columbian, the relationship between sort of the everyday people and our First Nations over here, you see a lot of white Canada and immigrant Canada standing with First Nations over here.
And the problem is that when it comes to meaningful change, that's where the resistance comes out. And the reason why it's so important in Saskatchewan is just frankly the numbers. So the numbers as they were in 2016, 22% of Saskatchewan's population was non-white. So 16% Indigenous, 6.3% other visible minority. That's not a small percentage. But when you look at governing structures where the representation falls short of those wider proportions, you have problems. How are you going to address issues of systemic racism if your elected officials aren't emotionally invested in the problem? Now, what the solution is, whether there's a willingness to even embrace the need to solve that problem, that's what we're going to see. But in my mind, the reasons why racial tensions in the Prairie provinces, as you say, have not resolved over time is because of a latent indifference towards meaningful change. And in my mind, that has to change.
It's it's almost sad because, you know, as an outsider that came in and joined this sort of Canadian experience, you're very shocked to find out about how First Nations people are treated. I find the more east you go, that relationship almost sometimes gets worse. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of history behind it. And, but I honestly think that as a country, we're doing ourselves a great disservice by keeping this blatant division out there in the open. And I look at parties like you know, Brian Pallister's conservatives over there. And, you know, the whole concept of not acknowledging systemic racism, I think it is going to be one of these laughable points now of our generation. To deny that it exists is almost to like deny that the world is round.
I completely agree, Hafiz. Any politician at this point that is denying the existence of systemic racism is just digging themselves into a hole. And I think they'll find themselves very embarrassed when the things that they're choosing to ignore when they make those statements start to become glaring in their faces. François Legault has Jason Kenney, for example, when he called intersectionality, his words were a kooky academic theory, if I recall correctly. That's going to haunt him because, like, you know this, I know this, Hafiz. If you're a visible minority, intersectionality, the idea of differences in culture, moments of tension, different factors, race, gender, age, body type coming together to exacerbate prejudice, and for that to be rooted in institutions, whether it's police forces, whether it's healthcare, the ability to secure public sector employment, all of these cultural factors come together for every single individual differently. That's what intersectionality for me captures. And if you're somebody like François Legault who's downplaying systemic racism, if you're Jason Kenney calling intersectionality a kooky theory, yeah, that's not something you're going to be proud of as we move forward.
I was actually pretty shocked when Jason Kenney did that. Just because I honestly thought, you know, my uncle and Jason Kenney worked together when Jason Kenney was the immigration minister. And, you know, Jason Kenney was seen by many immigrants as this modern conservative that's different and more accepting and understanding. And he kind of did this whole 180 now as premier. But going back to Saskatchewan and sort of how the cultural differences currently exist, I'm reminded of one of my Twitter followers that taught me a lot about the Junior Lacrosse League in Saskatchewan that's doing a lot, and I think it's in between Saskatchewan and Alberta, and that's doing a lot more to integrate kids that come from, you know, white backgrounds and kids that come from First Nations backgrounds into playing a sport together and having sort of more mixed teams. And sort of he was telling me about the blatant racism they would see and how they acted to defend these kids. And there's, I think, a generation of men in this province that also appeal sort of more to the conservative side, but have no time for the old style of racist bullshit. And I'm hoping more of them get a chance to speak up.
Well, it's going to require more, as you say, Hafiz. And one example that comes to me, it's not just a matter of sports leagues. It's a matter of meaningful change in the core institutions of society. And the first one that comes to mind for me is policing and justice. Like, if you look at the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, as it has evolved over the last decade, Saskatchewan is a perfect case study. And one of the factors, if you look at the reason why Indigenous women don't feel safe in many parts of rural Canada, is questions like lack of transportation, police responsiveness, what police do when they arrive at a scene, what an individual officer's instinct is when he or she looks at a problem situation and develops their approach. Like, what is the first impression? Do they see race? And you see white people sometime like to use the line, I don't see race. That's not the right answer. You have to see race in order to acknowledge your prejudices. Because if you don't, if you just don't see race, you may well just do whatever you've done before and continue to advance the problem rather than the solution. So as you allude to, Hafiz, there are individuals that are moving in the direction of inclusiveness, and that's important. More individuals need to do that. But we also have to look at institutions, both in terms of how they're structured and the practices that are promoted within them, because we need meaningful change. And it's not just sports teams that's going to do that.
And I agree with you. It's not the sports teams that are going to do that. That was more sort of just, you know, an anecdote of an example of something I've seen and sort of can empathize to what they are trying to achieve and sort of showing that the spirit does exist out there and hoping that something more like that can happen.
Completely. It's just, it's not a question of denigrating anybody who might do things like that, because that has value. We need to move beyond symbolism into meaningful action. The two are not mutually exclusive.
Yes, yes, very much so. I think this is an interesting point to leave off. And I think it's been quite informative. And as we do our little trot around this country to find out a little bit more about the people that exist in this wonderful land we call Canada. And, you know, all of us are spread all over this wonderful nation. Maybe try to develop a little bit more understanding. It'll be nice to see if we can get maybe some voices from the East Coast out there. So if you're listening and you want us to learn more or talk more about something that's happening in your end of Canada, drop us a line and we'll definitely connect with you. You can find me on Twitter at Feezy Does It, and Aaron, you're at Aaron Seal.
Yeah, right. Aaron with 1A Seal on Twitter. And absolutely, we need to have a nice conversation about the East Coast, and I'm really looking forward to talking about the North.
All right. And for FU Network, this is Hafiz Narani, and you've heard Aaron Seal. Thank you very much. This has been another episode of Non-Ontario. We appreciate your support and hope you tune in once again for our next episode. Thank you very much, and good night.